Hello friends and welcome back. We are going to discuss the final chapter for this subject, basically on the IT infrastructure and the way forward. IT is evolving, ever evolving. The IT which you see 9 years before, or when the IT which we used to see with the floppy drives and say the 3.5 mm floppy drive, and the IT of now, where even the existence of CD is not there, right? So IT is changing. Way forward is the clearly evident that it's going to be a journey of the artificial intelligence. It's going to be a journey of the predictive analysis. The example which I had quoted of having the truck tire being monitored frequently. In fact, to give you a more insight on what is going to be a way forward, or what is currently also as we speak, if you recollect, because of the pandemic, the flights were grounded, they were locked down across the globe. Since the flight was not flying on 35,000-40,000 feet, imagine the kind of data which each flight used to provide to our meteorological department. And based on all the data, they used to proactively forecast, what is going to come as a weather, what is going to become as a cyclone, and so on and so forth. But because of this 2 years of the lockdown and the less number of flights being flying, all datas were not being sent across. Imagine the, kind of problems, kind of issues they might have faced. And there is a clear dependency on weather, right? Because it's 208 parameters by each flight, which is giving your wind speed, which is giving the humidity, which is giving, the geographical airborne particles, and so on and so forth. Nothing was going to the meteorological department, and the meteorological department was only and only dependent on the satellite images, satellite information, right? So the data and the need of the data and processing the way of the data, use of artificial intelligence is going to be a key going forward. So what we are going to learn in this chapter is, if you want to have a continuous data, or if you want to run a continuous business operations, how strong you are from the business continuity perspective. Okay, what are your recovery mechanisms? What is your readiness for the recovery? That's what we're going to touch base on. We'll talk about what are the warm side, hot side, cold side of the data center perspective. Again, an important element. Cloud also is something which we are going to discuss. But having all this in place, we need to have some framework. Okay, so we'll be talking about some concept of ITIL, which is predominantly on the service. We'll talk about ISO 27000, which talks about the information security, which basically are the framework which gives you a direction on where to go. And also we'll be talking about several laws and the applicability of laws, like the land of law, which we'll be talking about in brief. And finally, the new technologies, which I just called out. Okay, so let's get going and let's understand what is business continuity. Business continuity, if you recollect my very first example on the very first session I had given, is if you are a banking customer, or if you want to issue a ticket from IRCTC, okay? If you are not the user of the internet and you want to issue the ticket from the window, right? Or if you want to, say, deposit some amount of money in the bank, okay? You walked into the bank and the bank says, my link is not working, or maybe my server is down. It may happen frequently whenever you are carrying out municipal transactions, or whenever you're carrying some policy related transactions in the branch. Why do you think it happens? What is the problem? Is it a local problem related to that specific branch, that specific link, that specific server, or it's a centralized problem wherein everybody is impacted, right? So what is your business continuity in place? How you want to ensure that none of your requests which are walked into the plant are going unaddressed? That's where the business continuity which we are going to discuss, right? It's also very important that since IT is now the business enabler, IT is now giving a lot of support on the infrastructural and application front, it is very, very essential to have a complete alignment between IT and the business. Whatever infrastructure, whatever architecture I am building on. Say for instance, I am building on my storage infrastructure which can support my recovery point objective. We will talk about recovery point objective in some time. Of 6 hours, but my business wants it in 4 hours. Am I aligned? If I am not, then it's a problem, right? So there are several aspects which we will talk about it on the business continuity, the business impact assessment, and so on and so forth. But business benefits can also be achieved if we have some framework, some guidance in place, and that's where the help of from ITIL and ISO comes in. Right. So when you talk about adopting a standards like ITIL, ITIL has a very defined service framework, right, which we had discussed in our previous session. Very important because of the simple fact that it covers everything. It covers all the aspects of the infrastructure, security, and also the business continuity, right? So it's very important to have some framework in place, with a simple reason that we are not missing out on anything. Okay, if we work without any direction, then there are high chances that we miss out on some component. But that's where. And the beauty or the advantage could be that our manpower can be reduced at a great extent. So when I say the manpower can be reduced, I am not talking about removing anybody, but using the bandwidth to someone or at the some place where the people can add value. Okay, so maybe my overall cost of ownership would go down. And that's what is, the business demands. I may have the increased service level availability. Okay, I may have a very happy customer base because my services are always available as and when it is needed, right? And the list is long. So having a framework always helps. And then now if we move the and now if we move our gears, okay, or if we shift our gears, why the business continuity planning itself is necessary? You may have the natural disaster, you may have the man-made disaster. If you have a political imbalance in the city where you are hosting your services, if you have flood, which is a natural disaster, or if you have the employee shortage in the vicinity, how do you run or how do you ensure business that you are available whenever it is needed? So that's where you plan the business continuity. You are also mentally prepared. Your staff is trained to act or deal with the situation as and when it comes. Okay, you are not surprised. So if you have the proper BCP, DR, or business continuity and disaster recovery plan in place, along with the several scenarios, you know for sure that whom to contact, how to deal with the situation, how to inform media, how to bring back up the servers, how to mobilize the resources, and so on and so forth, right? So business continuity on the paper, it is very, very, very important. It also gives a comfort to the senior management that, hey, I have the established practices in place, so nothing to worry. My folks will be in a position to deal with it if the situation comes. But one important element which generally gets missed out during the BCPDR is having a need of updating it regularly. If you're changing your solution, if you're changing your technology somewhere, ensure that it is also updated on your BCP document, because today the engineer is someone, tomorrow the engineer may change, and if they are not equipped with the latest document, then probably your BCPDR is bound to fail. Before we jump on to the BCPDR as a document, formalized document, something very important is the BIA, or a business impact assessment, or business impact analysis, they call it as. Business impact analysis is, to simplify in a very, very layman term, is we take inputs from the business asking what is the amount of impact as a business as a whole will have if my IT services is not going to be available for X number of hours, and till what you can sustain in the industry. Okay, so when we'll talk about the maximum tolerable outage, we'll talk more about it. But now understand that to have the business impact assessment or analysis done, I need to have inputs from the business stakeholders. I need to sit with them. I need to discuss across with them that if my plant is failed, my centralized infrastructure is failed, my employee unrest, my so-and-so thing is impacted. Maybe my raw material is impacted. Maybe my finished good is you know, stopped to ship out. What is the impact? And how much can you sustain? If you want less impact because we have grown, we have commitment towards our customer to deliver our goods, maybe I can have a state-of-the-art infrastructure in place so that my outage is next to zero. Take an example of the banking and financial institutions. They have near to zero downtime. And why? Because it's need. They have a walk-in customers, and your customers should not be turned back. But if you talk about an example of any manufacturing industry, it is okay to have a pileup of the truck lines, say for an hour. However, few businesses may also not appreciate that because you may have a commitment to you know, given to someone. Take an example of you know, the ready mix concrete. Imagine there is an contractual agreement between the builder and the ready mix concrete supplier that, you know, within half an hour, so whenever I call, within half an hour my ready mix concrete needs to be delivered to my site. We all of us know, right, cement gets hard over a period of time. So it is an endeavor from the business or from the company who is supplying the ready mix concrete that they need to provide that RMC or a ready mix concrete in the desired time frame. Now your concrete has been manufactured, but you are not able to invoice it out. Then obviously you will not be able to ship your trucks out of the facility, and then that's where you are breaching your SLA, and you may have a penalty also, right? So that's the reason. This is what the meeting happens along with the business senior leadership, wherein you clearly articulate your recovery time objective, the time you want to recover your operations, the recovery point objective, the data point, till what point you want the data whenever I am restored, and the maximum tolerable outage, wherein if you are not meeting or you are not restoring the operation in certain amount of time, you have a high risk of going out of the business. We'll talk about examples and it will become more clear to you. Moving on to the recovery time objective is you know, if I understand or if I make you understand in the simplified term is, it is the time duration between the occurrence of a disruption, so whenever the outage has come, and my data services are again available or my resources are available. That's the recovery time objective. Generally, it is ranging from 2 hours to 4 hours, but all depends on your organization need. It can be customized. The more sugar you put into the dessert, the more sweeter it becomes, right? So it the same way. So if you want an improved RTO, you obviously need to invest more. You obviously need to have the adequate redundancy from the link level, from the server level, from the data center point of view level, everywhere, right? Again, the RTO is, as we discussed before, it needs to be aligned with the business stakeholders. It cannot be done in silos. Once it is done, you have the adequate investment plan, and you know, based on the inputs which you receive from the stakeholders, you design the solutions for meeting that RTO. RPO, in relation with the backup solution which you are going to design for your organization. So this RPO always talks about at what point you want a data to be restored whenever there is a restoration from the infrastructural point of view, right? Here, for an example, for a bank, it may be in few minutes. For manufacturing, it may be in few hours, or maybe for some other industry, it's okay to have even days, because you are having a manual transaction, and probably you can post it back on your enterprise ERP whenever the link is restored. So no impact as such. However, this again needs a lot of inputs from your business folks, and your backup strategy depends on this RPO. You cannot have the reduced investment on the backup if your RPO requirement is very high, right? So RPO also identifies on your application tolerance as well, okay? Your application should also be equipped enough to sustain. So say for example, if you have the replication happening between the DCP, the BCP and the DR facility, or maybe your primary site and your DR facility, if your application is not capable enough to ship the log from one place to another place in a specific timeline, maybe your RPO can go on toss, right? So the, all these factor consideration needs to be put into the thought process. And believe me, friends, there is a specific department also sometimes in the organization who are basically responsible for conducting BCPDR. And this becomes more important when you are regulated by the authorities. Like say, for example, if you are in the telecom business, probably DOT is regulating it. If you're in the financial institutions, maybe RBI is regulating and so on and so forth. Maximum tolerable outage. So if you are into the stock market, or if you are into dealing with the very heavy transactions, and obviously for you the uptime, the reachability to the say to the Bombay Stock Exchange or a National Stock Exchange or MCX holds a lot of value. Even if you have an outage of 5 minutes, maybe you are losing the crores of the transaction on which you may have say 0.5% of the brokerage. You are foregoing that revenue, right? Can you sustain that? So maybe one instance is okay, maybe five instances is okay, but what if during a budget session when you have a complete volatile market and you want to carry out the maximum transaction, and if you have an outage then, and if you're not able to recover within say probably 1 day, maybe nobody, all your customers would turn away from you and would go to some other customer or to some other provider. You are out of the business, right? So maximum tolerable outage is something, a very clear guideline one should have in mind, that if beyond a point, if I am breaching, I will not be able to sustain my business. So how do you carry out the business impact assessment? So pretty much the same thing what we discussed, but it is just put in a diagrammatically form, wherein you define your BIA first, you identify your the key products, your key stakeholders, you also identify your financial and operational impacts, which is a part of your requirement gathering whenever you're meeting to the business folks. You identify your critical processes. So everything may not be very critical. All the servers may not be very critical. You may have one or two, a kind of crown jewel application which you want to be restored immediately. It's okay to have a satellite, other applications to be restored at a later point in time. But again, you need to identify them, okay? You need to prioritize, as I said. So whenever you want to restore back, okay, you should have the robust SLA with your provider, your partner, to at least cover your critical applications or crown jewels, to be very precise. Finally, once you do that, you also need to estimate your resources, because somewhere you need a manual intervention, somewhere you need a human intelligence to carry out certain task. If you have not right-sized the person at your disaster recovery facility, probably your BCP may not be of value. You determine the RTOs for the critical activities. You have another important element is you identify clearly the dependency between the stakeholders. If you know for sure that you are going to need the finance people for testing once you restore, you need to have them aboard, right? And you need to have a close coordination. You need to have their availability as well. I have seen BCPDR plant failing just because of the lack of coordination. They were not even aware about their being required for these activities, right? So that's something very important. Finally, whatever RPO, whatever backup strategy you are doing it, this also needs to be factored and documented and updated accordingly. Okay, having a BCP is not the job done. You need to also continuously test it. Frequency you may decide. I've seen many organizations who run the operations 6 months from the primary side, 6 months from the secondary side. I have seen the matured organization who just runs or who invokes the BCPDR test once in a year. I have seen a few people who do it once in 6 months, and so on and so forth. So all depending on your business demand, all depending on your need, and all depending on your comfort, you need to have the BCPDR testing also planned. Why BIA is important, we have anyways discussed, but let's touch base on the few points. The important element is it helps you having one step ahead from the disaster to come. You are mentally prepared, you are also technically prepared on what is going to come. Because you have tested and everything is put it across on the table, right? Again, having the BIA would evaluate the vulnerabilities and risk whatever you're carrying on your organization. If you do not have that practice of BIA, maybe the business senior leadership is asking something else. And when you talk out during a discussion, you realize that you are not equipped technically. You don't have that much bandwidth. You don't have, you know, that much infrastructure in place to support the business expectations, right? So all these risk and vulnerability generally comes out. And at the same time, since it affects your business transaction, your monetary values, it is important that, you know, it is being done in a formalized way, that enough time is being spent on it, right? So what are the considerations when generally you have this practice is asset identification. So if you remember, I had said that if you do not know the asset going on in your environment, you cannot protect it. Same goes with BI as well. If you do not know what are the assets you you are going to deal with it, you cannot have the robust or the effective BI or BCP, right? So that's something very important element. Risk analysis is, again, whatever dependency, whatever risk, whatever partners you are going to be dependent on, everything needs to be documented. Whatever risk you are carrying needs to be documented and approved from the senior management. Emergency response is also something very important, wherein you should have the reciprocal agreements, you should have the arrangement with maybe the nearest fire station, maybe nearest police station, maybe nearest gas station, wherein they are in a position to supply you the adequate diesel to run your generators. So all should be a part of your coverage whenever you're discussing the BIA or the BCP. Finally, as I had said, I've seen a lot of BIA or BCP being failed because of the lack of communication. Sometimes I've seen the teams even not being aware about having the BCP in place. So whenever there's an audit from external agency, they sit across the table and they realize that, hey, we have the BCP also, but I have not contributed in it. I don't trust this document because I was not involved and I don't know whether it will support my area or not. Communication, a very, very important element. Okay. Finally, the business continuity management is planning. Plan ahead of the disaster, anticipate all which is going to come. In fact, as we speak today, many of the organizations BCP failed because they had not emphasized the scenario of pandemic. Obviously, it has come after 100 years, but nobody has emphasized, and because of which they failed miserably. And now all the BCP and BI document has one of the element or one of the scenario also of the pandemic, right? Organize it well. Make it as detailed as possible. Maybe if you don't want to make the main document detailed, add in a supporting annexure or something, but ensure that everything is there, everything is documented in place, so that people are same aboard and they can refer whatever it is there and whenever it is required. Okay. Directing is something that we need to have a clear understanding between all relevant stakeholders. If the person is not aware about his job responsibilities or the actions which he or she needs to take during such events, it creates a chaos, it creates a confusion. And and finally, what gets affected? Your business. And I've told you, right, that if there are few businesses nature are also in a way that if you are not coming back in certain times, you lose the trust from your customer, and because of which you lose the opportunity, you lose the business. Controlling is something where you come, you create a forum, probably you come together on the platform, maybe on the conference room table, or maybe whichever way your organization has a nature of. You can come together, you discuss, you talk out, you also discuss the improvement areas, where you also discuss the gaps, right? So that should also be a continuous process. Finally, what your BCP document should contain is all the listed out, and the list can go up to several pages, but yes, these are the critical ones. These has to be there. So one is the condition for activating plans. Many a time I have seen people taking a delayed decision because they are not clear. They are checking with one and another senior folks whether to invoke the DR or not. Sometimes the senior leadership is traveling, not reachable, unavailable, not lifting the phone on Sundays, and because of which the decision of invoking the DR gets derailed. What gets impacted? Business. So that should be clearly articulated. Your prioritize of the application, as I said just some time back, that you need to have your crown jewels defined, and you need to have a surety in mind that what I can restore my email at later point in time, but let me restore the SAP because it's a business critical application. You may also would like to identify the number of logins. Maybe you cannot open the say your SAP systems or your ERP systems for all the users. Probably you can probably out of 100 you can give you can run a capacity of 50%, but that should be there documented so that everybody is aware that only 50% transaction can be carried out. At least my critical customers will not be impacted. Communication plan, very, very important. We have discussed some time back. Feedback procedure. So whatever you are learning from your BCP practices as a feedback or as an improvement area, it should also be documented, and it should be within the DNA. You cannot be asked to do all this, but it should be very much there a part of your document controlling, which we have discussed some time back, and awareness to the relevant people, relevant staff, relevant authorities, including senior management, should be there in place so that everybody is aware and everybody is assured that we have the BCPDR in place, right? Testing, again, what I mentioned some time back, few people run or few businesses run 6 months from the alternate facility. If you do it once in a year, maybe once in a 6 months, all depends. And in fact, few people also ask the auditor to be a part of the DR drill. Why? To have an independent view on what went right, what went wrong, what can be the improvement areas can be worked upon. So the auditors are also onboarded as an observer, right? On what is happening. So certain tests, say scenarios wherein you have structural walkthrough. It is also called as a tabletop exercise where you call everybody on the conference room, or maybe on a call on the virtual platform. You kind of simulate the virtual environment. You say that now this has happened. What you do. So whatever the responsible person in the line will represent their action points, their action plan, and it's a kind of structural exercise which you carry so that you know that we have discussed it verbally, and probably there is a need. We'll be in a position to execute it as well. Integrated test is wherein you probably actually carry out this test on ground, maybe on the not on the production facility, maybe on your development environment where you have a kind of replica. In fact, for the larger banking and the government institutions, they also have a replica where they can test without disturbing the production environment. So maybe you can have a such integrated test between several components to just see that my BCPDR is working as expected or not, right? Some also can have an incident simulation wherein either security incident or some other, like say maybe my server is shut down. I would manually shut down the server, or I would manually plug the cable out to see how the teams is behaving, acting. Technical recovery testing is also one of the piece wherein again many a times it happens that I am taking a backup every day, every month, but have I ever tested the restoration practices? Maybe I realize that if I am restoring, it is not working. My application is not working as it is supposed to be, right? So all these technical testing could surfaces out all such problems, which will be helpful in enhancing your business continuity plan. Supplier facility testing, again a very important. You may have the robust infrastructure in place, but how about your supporting staff? If somebody is providing you the remote support from Bangalore or from US or from anywhere else, are they also prepared for the BCP practices? That needs to be clearly called out here, because if you are prepared and if they are not, who are going to support your operations? what's the point, right? So that also needs to be clearly factored into. Again, partial simulation test is something wherein I would not make the entire application down. I'll probably make only say the login page simulated as a part of my the partial testing, wherein I would only make that application built on my development environment. I will ask all the user to test it on my partial simulation. If it works well, I at least have some comfort that yes, I'm good here. I don't want to play around with the data transactions and everything. I would just see the login successful is happening or not. Full simulation is only the rich organizations, or whenever the organization is matured enough, they do this kind of exercise, because it needs a lot of investment also. You need to have the exact replica, exact same model, same application, same data structure in place with your parallel environment also. Okay, now with a lot of uncertain things happening in the world, people have understood the importance of having the replication or the replica of the environment, and they have started investing it also on them. Information management system. So to continue on what we learned in the last chapter on the security, okay, there is something on the framework side also which we should keep in mind, right? So what is the information management system? I would say the information is everywhere. Information is there in the mind of people. Information is also there in the piece of paper or printout. Information is also lying on my personal laptop. Information is lying on my USB flash drive. Information is on my phone, everywhere, right? Depends whether the information is relevant to me, but there are also several actors who make the information themselves available. Take an example of the courier which we receive, right? We generally have the address and the phone number also. For the one who is building the database, they sell each phone number for 3 rupees. Do you know that? Right. So it is very much a useful information for them. You may be putting the mobile number just for a convenience, that if the courier guy is reaching out and if he or she is not available at home, probably they can contact. But there are other actors also who are taking advantage of such information, right? And that's why very important to protect the information, because you may not know that if you are losing this information, at what all places it can create a problem. So let me give you an example. One of my friend, he might have taken a loan and he was into business. Now obviously his business is not doing well, so he had taken some loans. Now obviously he's not picking up the phone from the bank authority, and he had not provided my number as a reference, but this bank folks, they got hold of the society WhatsApp group. They managed to get my number, and they kept on trying to troubling me. They were asking me to make me talk my friend, right? So how they got my numbers from all such sources, right? So one needs to introspect at what all places I am, storing the information on, and how do I protect it. That's why there are certain frameworks available. I would call ISO 20000 or 20000X or say 27000X is a very, very established and very successful model. A little bit of theory, will not go into the much detail on the history of it, but yeah, it was way back established in the year 1999. There's only one revision which has happened in 2017. So now ISO 27000 is also referred to as ISO 27000-2013. The control remains same after the revision. So there are about 114 controls, but before we go there, there are several versions of ISO 27000. So ISO 27001, 2, 5, etc., etc. There are some design controls based on their methodology. So one could be providing the certification. One could be providing the methodology on how to have the ISO 27000 controls in place, and so on and so forth, right? So, however, in the interest of the subject and the scope of the subject, we'll not be required to go into the much of the detail. But yes, there are specific certifications also happen on the ISO 27000 as a lead auditor or the lead assessor, right? So these things are happening. one important thing is the baselining. Whenever you are going for a certification for ISO, right, there are certain things which plays a very important role. Is they ask you to identify your asset and they ask you to categorize those assets. If it is a data center based asset, are they categorized as severity 1 assets? And if there are some assets which are at the branch level, probably they are of the severity 3 assets. So maybe my impact would be less, right? How would be my probability? And one thing everyone of us needs to understand is ISO 27000 works on the risk-based approach. You are expected to identify your asset. You are expected to have a risk register in place, which could be a detailed one in your organization. And also based on your organization risk assessment framework, you need to also have the appropriate mitigation control against each risk, right? So again, all depends on your nature of your organization, what you want to call it as. But ISO 27000 revolves around the risk assessment methodology on the prima facie. Again, there are several controls which are listed out from AFI, and there are again sub controls also. So those who are more interested in it, I mean, they can research, and few have been also called out in the book. You can go into the detail, but it's a very interesting subject. This covers in the totality. So there are 114 controls, to be very precise, and they are categorized in several categories. So just to name or call out a few. You have operation security, you have a communication security, wherein you cover your network routers, you cover your MPLS circuits, and so on and so forth, right? For the information and security incident management, you may have the policy and procedures, you may have the SOC 1, SOC 2, SOC 3 reports, and so on and so forth, right? So all are such factors which are being captured as a framework. Idea is just to be ensure that you're not missing out on anything. What do you achieve? Why organizations strive for ISO certifications? For the simple reason that you are giving comfort to the third party, to your customer, that I have not assessed myself. I have been certified by the certification body of BSI. They have confirmed that all my practices are in line with the requirement, and I'm good. And I'm kind of protecting your data. I'm protecting your information, so you can safely deal with me, right? So that's kind of one of the advantage. But the other advantages could be it provides a structured and complete risk-based methodology. When I say structured, the advantage is, again, you are not missing out on anything because it's being covered. Your employees will have to take all these controls seriously, because at the end of the day, someone else is going to certify you, right? And as I said, your clients will also be assured that yes, you are in safe hand, or they are in safe hand. Okay. In fact, if you are dealing with some companies from abroad, the thing which they ask for such certification, I as a owner of my area in my company, okay, even if I want to onboard any provider, the very first question I would ask is, are you ISO certified? Now, depending on my need, I would ask them, are you ISO 20000 certified, or are you ISO 27000 certified? All depending on my need. But these are the questions which are being asked to them. The advantages are several. Finally, what the end objective or goal you achieve is, your processes, your policies are streamlined. You have a unified way of dealing with the incident. You have a unified way of dealing with the situation because of this ISO certification, right? And there are several all other examples, and I'm sure we all of us are aware about it. Take care of yourself. Thank you so much.